Welcome to the Gastric Health Show, where we help you achieve the happiest and healthiest version of yourself by motivating you to eat, move, sleep, and think better. Gastric Health Show. My name is Dawn Boxall, registered dietitian, and I'm excited to share with you this week a two-part series, an interview with Dr. Kristen Lloyd. She's a highly accomplished psychotherapist, transformational mindset coach, a college educator, and a consultant. She is also a certified Reiki master, a certified hypnotherapist, certified in EFT tapping practitioner, and Dr. Kristen is a best-selling author of Bariatric Mindset Success and Release Your Regain. So today's topic, motivation. I know what to do. Why don't I do it? Dr. Lloyd has come up with five key points that we are going to discuss. Welcome, Dr. Lloyd. We're excited to have you on the show.
Me.
Absolutely. Okay, let's roll right into those five key points when it comes to motivation. I know what to do. Why don't I do it?
The five that I wrote down, and they will all intermingle.
Okay.
Are projection.
Okay.
Rejection. Loss aversion, which I also have next to loss aversion is pleasure over pain.
Okay.
Identity. And mental health. So when we talk about, I know what to do, why don't I do it? Not in any specific order.
Yeah.
But the projection, you know, priorities, we can talk about priorities.
Yeah.
And competing priorities. One of the things I see a ton are individuals who have emotionally immature, have come from emotionally immature families.
Okay. Yep.
Lindsay Gibson's book, Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents, I refer people to a lot, has nothing to do with weight. Nothing.
Nothing. No. Right.
I need to meet everyone else's needs and there's nothing left for me.
Yeah. Understand that.
With food, with emotions, with energy, with movement, with stress,
yeah,
with sleep. I have to do it all. So there's a perfectionism theme.
Yep.
So where does the projection come in? I have to project that I have it together. I am not allowed to show weakness. But I'm falling apart.
Right.
I'm falling apart.
Right.
I don't know what I'm doing. And I know what to do, but I don't do it, but I'm mentally and emotionally exhausted. And the O word, I hear it on a constantly, like everyday basis.
Yeah.
Overwhelm.
Yeah.
And it's so used, and it's not a criticism. It's an awareness. It's so used, overused, that what happens, I think, neurophysiologically, is the minute that someone says I'm overwhelmed, it flips them into an even, it's so programmed that they go into a physiological shutdown. And then they scroll, they shame themselves for scrolling. And it's not about I can't, although that's what it feels like. So then we go into mental, like then we can piggyback on mental health and depression.
Right.
Am I depressed? But what's really fascinating is this projection of having to be all the things for everyone else also creates resentment.
Oh yeah, I could see that.
And it also creates a rejection of self.
Interesting. Okay. Because why? Why does that create a rejection of yourself?
Because the priorities, if the priorities dictate where you're spending your time and your energy, there's nothing left.
Yeah.
And the other part is psychologically, what we know as self-care, personal hygiene, showering,
right,
cooking food.
Yeah.
Things that we see are basic human life skills, basic human needs, right? For oneself, those become exhausting.
Yeah.
How that becomes a rejection of self is those get pushed to the back burner. And now we're focused on how can I receive pleasure?
Right. Because that should feel better.
That should feel better.
It should feel better.
So I'm going to go and find something pleasurable, and I don't have a lot of time, and I certainly don't have energy. Mm-hmm. So what are the choices? And there's the should do.
Yeah.
I should do this.
Yeah.
That's what my medical team says I should do. That's what everyone says I should do. But that's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
That's uncomfortable, and that's not fun.
Right.
So so here's another way that we can look through the lens of dopamine. I'm depleted.
Yeah.
And I want fun. I want pleasure. Ooh. And then the brain wants what's fun and pleasurable.
Right.
And until you've made peace, which that's complex, but until you've made peace with all food is equal,
mm-hmm.
or how am I meeting my needs? Or if you're seeking pleasure solely from food because other areas of your life are, I don't know, am I allowed to cuss on here? Right? Which
yeah.
is kind of like,
yeah, right.
When the rest of your life is kind of like exploding,
yeah,
and you're like, you know what, you are then worn down, right? So you've gotten to a point of decision fatigue, and then we go through the shame spiral. So you're certainly not, that individual is not saying, you know what, I'm gonna have some chicken and broccoli tonight,
right? Right?
They're not excited about that. They're not excited about that. It is. There's the seeking out of the highly palatable foods to pivot, because there hasn't been an equality of, wow, not only is this good for me, but I'm actually going to be able to notice these complex flavors, or where there is a chicken, like, I don't know, I'm just giving an example, like some grilled chicken with some asparagus and some risotto or something. Our folks are not eating that. Like maybe some are, but you know what I mean? Like we're not, like the folks that I work with and maybe that you work with.
Right.
It's the stuff that's gravitating is usually very specific, crunchy, sweet, salty.
Agreed.
Right. It's going to give you that hit pretty quickly.
Yep.
But the loss aversion piece is, don't take my Binky. This is my golem, like my precious.
Right.
So in some ways I tell them I am not here to take your Binky. I'm not here to take your Binky.
Right.
But that is when we see food,
mm-hmm.
there's also this, I cannot continue this pattern of doing this over and over and over. Okay. So then I'm going to touch on all of these things to some extent, and then I'll share the different layers, right? Okay. The loss aversion, and I put a definition so that we can, it's actually a behavioral economics term. It's not even.
Really? Like,
yes. It's not even used in this, but it can go a couple different things. Loss aversion is a cognitive bias where for individuals, the pain of losing something is psychologically twice as painful as the pleasure of gaining something else.
Interesting. That is interesting.
So it's usually discussed in terms of money, a value object, and a swapping out. When, and this is a term that I twitch at, but I have to say it because I think people will understand.
Yeah.
When I was prior to surgery and I would hear the saying, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. Ooh, I hate that saying.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I am not a fan. So I want everybody to know I am not using that term.
Right.
What I see in that though, is that whoever originated that term was trying to get people to feel, to choose the long-term gain over the short-term loss.
Yeah.
The problem is that term shames people.
True.
And it doesn't validate the short-term loss, nor does it give credit to shifting one's mindset around food. And so we need to address the loss aversion and the binky.
Right.
And build new coping skills, but it's just not just the coping skills. It's looking at, here's another term that I didn't put up here, but it's just as important, is the secondary gain, which has nothing to do with loss aversion.
Right.
But the secondary gain that we receive from continuing the same behavior over and over and over.
Yeah.
When we realize, what am I doing here? When we continually repeat a behavior, it doesn't have anything to do with knowing or not whether it's good for us, but the secondary gain is we're getting something from it. So if every night somebody's having a ice cream sundae and they're like, why am I night eating? Why am I doing this?
Right.
If I know what to do, why am I not doing it?
Right.
What are you getting from it? So secondary gain is that if it's not serving you on a primary level, if that's not intention, there's a secondary gain. You're getting something from it.
Right.
So sabotage, whenever somebody talks to me about sabotage, what are you getting from it? You're getting something. And
would you say mostly that's kind of like they're getting some type of boost in their mood? Are they getting just some energy? I mean, those type of things, or are you meaning different?
Different.
Okay.
This is where I go really deep.
Okay.
And I say this because years ago, and I used the same example this morning on a group call.
You did?
Yes. So years ago, I was working with a woman. And she came to me for emotional eating. And very quickly, like within the first couple of sessions, I realized her marriage was a point of contention.
Okay.
They got married out of necessity. He had some financial troubles. She was well off. She covered some of his medical expenses. She liked him, loved him, but knew she wasn't in love with him.
Mm.
Long story short, he was very opinionated and she really struggled with using her voice, speaking up for herself.
Yeah.
And he was a really great companionship. Like there was value to that relationship. And I'm not saying that there wasn't. But early on, I was giving her the very basic coping tools that I would, it's almost like I have tons of coping tools, but it's like, what works best for you, Dawn? What works best for you, Mary? What works best for you, right? You go through what's going to work best for your life. But there, those things are typically like band-aids. Those things are first, like what we may think of like as a first responder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's usually something much deeper in terms of attachment, mm-hmm. like attachment issues. When I think of attachment is how we attach to our primary caregiver,
mm-hmm.
attachment issues impact how we walk in the world, secure right. attachment, avoidant attachment, insecure or anxious attachment.
Right.
If there's codependency, if there's trauma,
right.
Like those things impact how you walk in the world.
Yeah.
Because of how you are or aren't validated
okay.
in your primary relationships.
Okay.
And very early, you know, she's like, this isn't working. This isn't working. These two aren't working. Now, it wasn't that she wasn't working the tools.
Yeah.
But they weren't enough because she had set a boundary with me, which is I'm not going to address the relationship stuff.
Oh, wow.
Not, and it wasn't with me. It was with him. Like, yeah. I'm not going to do A, B, or C. And it was right. like, well, we're pretty much done here because right. that's the source.
Right.
Like, and, yeah. you know, and then in terms of, I'm not going to feel my feelings because here's what happened the last time I did that. It's like, well, you know, maybe you need to go to therapy and work on that because
right.
it was a coaching dynamic. It was not a therapy dynamic. And it yeah. was like, I think this is what's going to, so redirect.
Right.
Why that's important is when you, what I want to do is help people see what the core issues are. If they need therapy, go to therapy to work on that. If it's couples therapy, if it's individual therapy, yep. if some new things have popped up, there are certain tools that I can give, you know, insight, information,
yeah,
a context in terms of where to move.
Right.
And the thing that's powerful about that, it shaves years off of self-discovery and exploration than if they wow. were to go into therapy and try to piece all of these puzzle pieces together.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome.
So that is one example of this, what am I willing to look at or not willing to look at in my life?
Yeah.
And
because there's always more.
I've not ever met someone who's right. in my practice.
Yeah.
I maybe there are other people that it's just food. I've not met anyone.
I bet.
But
not.
Maybe that's also because of what I do. Now, are right. there also, do I also meet people who have gut issues? Yes. Do I also meet people yeah. who are perpetually Dawn, yeah. taking antibiotics.
Right? Oh, right? Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Yeah.
Do I, but that's not my, like,
right.
Do I meet people who are, struggling with food choices or
right.
that kind of stuff, who are workaholics? And then that's another way to avoid dealing with things, or it's looking at also who are you. And the thing that I ask most frequently once I've built rapport is, what do you want beyond weight loss?
Oh yeah, that's good.
What do you want beyond weight loss? Because if yeah. you don't know what you want beyond weight loss,
right,
what are you going to get from the weight loss? Nothing. And a lot of people say confidence. Great. Confidence to do what?
To do what? Exactly. Exactly. I would agree 100% because I feel like, you know, over the years, you know, at the beginning, you counseling people, you're like, okay, yeah, you will feel better and you will have more confidence and you will be able to go do these things. But do they end up becoming that different person in a way that sets them up for long-term success, that now they're no longer needing a diet, they're no longer needing support in that way? No, it was like they just got stuck in that chronic. This was just another diet. It was just another
diet.
It was just another diet, and they never really dug in deep enough to really see that, okay, I want to do this for my health, or I want to do this so I can, you know, go to college, or if I want to get this promotion and take over, become the CEO or whatever, you know, you have in you, because we're all here, in my opinion, for a purpose.
Yes. Agree.
So what is that? I mean, what is that saying? The two most important days in your life are the day you're born and the day you discover why you were born.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't, as a society, I don't feel like.
Amen. Yes. Amen.
The majority of us.
No.
Have that upbringing or that ability to gather that ourselves. I mean, it's unfortunate.
It is.
But here we are with a society full of people who don't know true. They think weight loss is the solution.
It is not.
No.
Because what will happen, as you know, and I know, that they get there to this magical place where the clouds do not part, the birds do not sing, the angels are not harping, like nothing happens any day.
The husband's not nice anymore, nice. The kids aren't sweet and cherub-like and listen to you when you told them to.
Nothing changes.
No.
And you might be able to wear those cute pink shorts or whatever.
But.
And
what value is that?
If there is a vision and then they're like, okay, I'm here. And then the reality of all of the life stressors.
Yes.
The maybe the short term work, because this is work anyway, look at it. If you're focused on all I have to do is get here, any of us can do something for the short term.
Yep.
If your focus is all I have to do is get here, then what shows up after is a resentment for what you gave up.
Oh, yeah.
Which in that person's mind was they're precious.
Yep.
And then it comes back in.
Yeah.
And, or if there is some executive functioning stuff, they're flying by the seat of their pants potentially.
Yep.
And not even in a mindful state of, I'm doing this, right? And that catches up.
Yeah.
But then we have the mental health, anxiety, depression. The top three that I see are depression, anxiety, and attention deficit or executive functioning issues. Those are the top three that I see.
Okay.
It's not to say that there aren't other complex mental health issues.
Yeah.
But the thing that shows up with that is also a pattern, big words today, of learned helplessness.
Oh.
And victim mentality.
Oh, yeah. Yikes. Those are... Yeah.
For me.
Yes. Yep. I can't do that.
You don't understand.
Yep.
So
what gets someone to that? What gets, and yes, I know life and things happen, but you can have siblings grow up in the same house and experience life so differently. And yet, you know, one is a victim.
And one isn't.
And one isn't.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, could we look at adult children of, again, back to that adult children of emotionally yeah. immature parents, codependency. We can look at ACE scores. We can look, if you guys don't know what ACE yeah. is adverse childhood experiences. But those are still not all the research may say one thing, but I've also known a lot of people who have overcome what their ACE score said that they would be, right? So they've persevered.
Yep.
Right. And I tend to look for the outliers in terms of the people who persevere. And that is, there may need to be research on why or how certain people persevere. Because it doesn't necessarily have to be, some of it could be environment, but I've also known people who have been in horrible, horrific environments, and they are scrappy as hell. Like they are, you know, they're going to, you know, you've ever heard that phrase, throw me to the wolves and I'll come back the leader of the pack.
Yeah.
Like there are those.
Yeah.
And that's where I like to talk about learned helplessness, because we are given a choice. Yeah. We can adopt and believe the circumstances.
Yeah.
Or we can pivot and work through them and overcome them.
Yeah.
And not to, I kind of want to circle back because I don't want to get too far off topic, but you know, a thing that you said a little while ago is, you know, how do people get into self-rejection?
Yeah.
Patterns, but it's that even that pattern, when I discuss self-rejection, or it's not an overt, like I'm rejecting myself. It is by virtue of I'm struggling to make ends meet. I'm doing the best that I can. And I do believe that people are doing the best that they can with what they have.
Yeah.
And that includes their line of thinking, because we are.
Yeah, true.
We have modeled our family figures, right? So
sure, absolutely.
Social learning theory, right? Yeah. We model what we've seen.
Yeah.
And then we attract into our lives either what we, so there's another theory about we tend to attract the same type of relationships to create a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
If it hasn't been resolved, or if you're used to the cycle of abuse, there are people who may be or continue to perpetuate that cycle of abuse in adult relationships. Not everyone, but it's important to look at a lot of those patterns or dynamics. And we'll see it in different groups where people will talk about the divorce rate for bariatric patients being so high.
Right.
I have my own theories on it, but some of which are maybe patterns of abuse, but others could be like they were settling, they didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
It was maybe an unhealthy relationship to begin with, like a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily trying to make this all about relationships either, but that rejection of self can be a byproduct of I've got to do all these things,
mm-hmm.
whatever the priorities are. But at the same time, the same reason that I was talking earlier, when the dust settles, and somebody's going to the fridge, if I have to work on me, that individual has to work on themselves, and they don't know who they are. They don't know what they want.
Yep.
And that becomes, here we go with the O word again. overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know what? It's easier to pick up an extra 5 hours at work. It's easier to be a good doobie and do for somebody over here. It's easier to show up at this church function. It's easier to
put anything in that place.
Insert here.
Yep.
Than to work on myself. Mm-hmm. If you have some victim learned helplessness, well, I just had a couple brownies. Why go to the gym? Why bother? Right. So there's this other, it's because also the diet mentality for so many years is movement is punishment. I don't like it.
Yep.
For many, I'm not saying it's for all.
Yep.
It's something that I have to do, not something that I want to do.
Right.
And now I'm not happy in these layers of my life.
Right.
Work is long, work is hard. I'm giving so much of myself. Resentment, people take.
Yep.
And if you have a bunch of nurses,
mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say this. If you have a bunch of nurses who are already lovers, givers, overgivers.
Yep.
Highly compassionate, empathetic people.
Yep.
Who are giving so much to others, and then they're working a 12 or 15 hour day.
Yep.
I kind of described something a little earlier. They're not, and it's not that, it's not even about self-aware. Some people might be self-aware, some people might not.
Right.
But there's nothing left for them at the end of the day and for them to say, well, why don't I do it? Okay, well, there's is it motivation or is it energy?
Yeah.
Where are you getting your energy? Where are you replenishing your cup?
Yep.
We have passive relaxation versus active relaxation.
Yep.
Passive is numbing out, scrolling, watching TV. You don't replenish your energy that way. You replenish your energy through an active relaxation. The research shows that.
Yeah.
And
give some examples of some active relaxation.
Walking, forest bathing, yoga.
Yep.
Stretching.
Yep.
Physical,
something that includes some type of physical movement. Could it also be like
quilting, which isn't necessarily, but it's
an exercise.
It could be a quilting or a knitting because it's mindful.
Yep. Okay.
And there is an action there. It's not always physical in terms of an exercise. Like another one could be, although I don't think of this as exercise, but it could be playing pool or table tennis.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Right. So
yeah, So I think that's good. Cause I mean, I think that gives people information and insight to, okay, what is this? Do I really have to just exercise or can that account for?
Well, I mean, I think that there are so many things and you probably know more than I do. When we are, it's like a body in motion stays in motion. Like we're going, that movement, there are so many things that comes out of it. And I tell my people move for mental health. I don't usually use the word exercise or fitness because they twitch.
Yep.
And so I find that's another thing is, and I've played with the idea of kind of like writing a whole book about using operational definitions because the word healthy makes some of my clients twitch because then I'll ask them, what does healthy mean to you? Like you've got to define it. And there are so many people that literally go, I don't know.
Oh, wow.
So when we say, why don't I do it? A lot of times it's because they don't know what they're getting.
No.
they don't know, why am I doing this thing? I know that it's going to help me lose weight, but there's an emotional internal resistance.
Yep.
And they don't know what it is. And it's uncomfortable and it's sitting.
Yep.
In an uncomfortable place. And when we talk about discomfort, you mean to tell me I have to exercise? I hate that. You mean to tell me I have to go do this? And it's maybe because their friend Amy told them that she was going to CrossFit, and they were like, oh my gosh, I don't want to do that. Right. But then maybe somebody else loves that, right? You do you.
Yep.
It's why don't people take action? Why do folks struggle? The perception that it's going to be painful. It's not fun.
Yeah.
The perception that it's they're losing something, loss aversion, they're losing their coping mechanism, they're losing their best friend at some points, depending on how they're losing pleasure. Well, here's the thing. If that's the only pleasure they've had, because work sucks, my relationship sucks, my finances suck.
Yep.
What do they have?
Right.
I know it sounds depressing. Like, I'm not trying to be depressing, but it's
no.
I will ask, what is it that you want? What is it that you want? And sometimes it's too big of a question.
Yeah.
And so I have different, I a lot of times use the very basic life coaching wellness wheel.
Yes.
We all know about.
Yep.
To go, what do you want in this area? What do you want in this area? What do you want in this area?
Yep.
Grade yourself in those areas.
Yep.
Identity. Who are you?
Right.
Who are you when you're not nursing? Who are you when you're not serving? Who are you when you're not helping? Who are you when you're not othering?
Yep.
So the other piece, the food, why don't I do these things? The very basic answer, working on myself is hard.
Yeah.
Healing the wound, I don't want to face it.
Yep.
I want to just, if I just lose weight, it'll be better. The thing that a lot of people don't recognize is what's underneath the weight.
Yes. Yeah.
And then there's even more shame potentially if they go through menopause, because there's hormonal stuff. And then there's self-blame, shame, or guilt for the hormonal changes or the hormonal urges. Yeah. And why can't I just, what's wrong with me? And now they condemn themselves.
Yep. Which again, if they have that victim mentality, can get them really stuck in a place, because then they don't think they can, and they don't have the, maybe the awareness. I mean, they're ignoring the awareness at some level. If they're really having a victim mentality, they're, not accepting that awareness to, I do have a choice.
Right. Or I'm so flawed that it doesn't matter. And that's the thing, is it's none of us are ever going to be perfect. Right.
Right. So, exactly.
You know, the other piece about projection, and I meant this when I wrote the note to myself, but I forgot about this. So you have somebody who's, let's say, been sexually abused.
Yeah.
There's also, it's not so much a projection, but it's they may not consciously think the weight has been a protection mechanism.
Ooh.
So protection
is
another one where if the weight is protecting me from potentially getting abused again.
True. Yep. Oh yeah. Yep.
So they're like, why can't I? I know what to do, but if you start losing and you start to get attention, mm-hmm. I've had people say this to me before, and then comes back up.
Yep.
So the protection, the other projection protection, the weight as a protection or the habits as a protection. Because if somebody is continuing the same patterns, it's a protection from them actually having to go through like an ego death.
Oh, okay.
Or a protection for them actually having to deal with childhood issues or actually having to deal with their marriage or their job or their boss or using, you know, where they actually are using their voice. Voice is big.
Yeah.
Or they'll actually have to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because what people don't realize is that when you're bigger, you're invisible.
Mm-hmm.
As you lose weight and you're more visible and people see you, then there's a different expectation. Not that you didn't have expectations
before
when you were larger, but we've also got to address that there is weight bias.
There is
weight bias. Well, so yes. Now if why you don't do it, this is all subconscious, by the way. Nobody's thinking
intentionally. No. Intentionally. Nope.
But the patterns that continually come up now, are they woven into the dopamine and the serotonin?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But they're also driven by, you know, the freeze state or the, mm-hmm. you know, the sympathetic, the activated state.
Yeah.
We're talking nurses, how many are in an activated sympathetic state all day long? And then they come back home and they're like in a freeze.
Yeah. So how say someone is in that freeze state, they're not maybe even sure they are, but they think I probably could be in a freeze state. How does one get themselves out of that? Do you have to do certain types of like therapy or?
I would highly recommend somatic experiencing.
Yeah. Okay.
A somatic practitioner, because coming out of freeze, it's movement is a great way to come out of freeze.
Mm-hmm.
Your peeps are going to be like, darn it.
Dang it.
The whole thing is movement. But very, very specific. The other, you know, we want movement. But how you work through, it's working through more than it is getting out of, right?
Yeah.
Because we normally go through a sympathetic, we're activated all day long. If I'm going to the grocery store and somebody stops, this is one of the ways that I explain it, is somebody stops really fast and you throw on the brakes and you're like,
yep.
Okay, I almost hit that guy. You're going to go through an activation and then you'll go through a settling.
Yep.
And we go in and out of those states.
All day.
The window of tolerance, right?
Yeah.
And when you go through a prolonged activation,
mm-hmm.
that's where, and I'm sure through your work, you may even notice some adrenal fatigue, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And some things HPA like that.
Access dysregulation, more of that. Yep.
Yes. So when there are things that are going to be soothing for someone physiologically to come out of an activated state,
mm-hmm.
when somebody goes into freeze, there's usually a lot more immobilization.
Okay.
Like, I just want to sleep. I just want to numb, dissociated.
Yep.
And the food can help with that.
Yeah, I can see that.
And that's over time leading to, I consider it self-harming, because it's not contributing to longevity, health, wellness.
Yep.
In the long term, it's that idea. And I don't know if you've heard this. It's what you used as a coping mechanism originally as a trauma response may have protected you. It was used as a protection mechanism.
Yep.
The cookies under the stairs when your parents were fighting, or, you know, the things that you did to avoid an abuser, or all of those things, they protected you at one point in time. Like, and now that coping mechanism is now at a point where it's become self-harm. We've got to change it, but we can't just replace the coping mechanism.
Yeah,
we've also got to address the underlying physiological drive.
Yep.
And the habit pattern.
Yep.
And the environment or triggers.
Yep.
Choose triggers. And then the other piece that with triggers, we identifying triggers, but this is used a lot in somatic experiencing as well, the glimmers.
Okay.
What are the things that drive hope? What are the things that spark joy?
Right.
We talk about triggers, but we don't talk enough about glimmers.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Protection is that we're hardwired for fear. So we, where's the fear response? So that a lot of times things are for protection.
Right.
But if that protection at an early age was rejection, because it was fueled through, I need to take care of their needs. And now I'm in the good girl or boy.
Yeah.
When I start to read the room, I need to not have feelings. I need to not make noise, not cry.
Yeah.
Then you learned in early childhood to reject using your voice, to reject your own needs.
Yeah. That makes me think of just healthcare workers.
Yeah.
Does it set them up for going into healthcare because they were kind of already trained to not? I remember just being in college for becoming a dietitian. We had counseling classes and they would teach you, you can't show emotion to the person so that you, you know, you disrupt how they feel.
Right. And
you need
them to turn around and caretake you.
Yep. Yep. So you have to, and you can't act surprised. And I remember, and you talking about some, you know, patients that have maybe been raped or sexually abused, and they put on the weight because of that. So they're no longer attractive. And I remember, it would have been probably 1997, something like that. I had my first like 600-pound patient. She was in her 20s. Her parents were both healthcare workers and they wanted her to have bariatric surgery. And our whole program went through this big review. And when I had did my part with her one-on-one, that was what came out. She had been raped as a 13-year-old. And she she just started eating because she was like, I did not want to look attractive to anyone. She would have these big binges. And I just remember in my training, I'm like, okay, I can't show emotion. But yet after that, I'm just like blown away. I mean, a half of a sheet cake, then go in and get a pizza. And then, I mean, it just went on and I'm just like, oh, my heart just broke. I'm just like, oh my gosh, you have no idea until you're one-on-one with those people and they're like really explaining how they got to where they are. And it's like not even their fault.
Right. And that's that's the thing is that, so there's the physical abuse, there's the sexual abuse, there's
emotional.
Yes. Like I have a client.
Verbal.
Yes. I have a client right now who's, her parents would give her the silent treatment as a child.
Yeah.
Like as a form of punishment. Like, so essentially what you grow up to internalize is not so much I'm invisible, but I don't matter. So you have that as a child. I don't matter. And here's another one. I don't matter.
Yeah.
And the thing, and I see this a lot, is women, because I work mostly with women.
Yeah.
Women whose mothers put them on diets at 5 and 7 mm-hmm. and 9.
Yep. Pick an age. It doesn't matter. They did it.
And
yep.
And the diet started early.
Yep.
And so their worth was equated. So now we're trying to pull apart. Your worth is not equal to the scale. They cannot conceptualize it. Because when you've been told that your entire life, your worth is equal. So then what you create is a dynamic of a fight with food, because food in a lot of ways is a socially acceptable outlet, right? And it's, absolutely, and it's commercialized. Bridget Jones' Diary is my favorite example, where she goes through her breakup and she's having, I don't remember if it was Haagen-Dazs or Ben and Jerry's. Very like, and we're not going to get out of food a celebration. We're not, it's not going to change.
Yeah.
But when you work with somebody who's lost 40, 50 pounds and their spouse takes them out to dinner,
mm-hmm.
it creates a different dynamic because, and I'm getting, you know, but then food is reward. And it really disrupts a change in how they see food and how they interact with food and their relationship with themselves, validating, nurturing or not versus escaping. But then the other part is eat this, right? So cultures, depending on your culture, eat this. Why aren't you eating? Da, 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 da. And then don't get fat.
Okay, this is where we're ending part one. So next week, join us back for part two of motivation. I know what to do. Why don't I do it?